You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Eternal and Transient Elements, The Cosmic Past of Humanity and the Mystery of Evil, Collected Works, Volume 184, translated by Anna Moyes. This is Lecture 2, given on the 7th of September, 1918. Full insight into the situations we are currently considering will not be possible unless we take a closer look at the nature of the human being between going to sleep and waking up again, that is, in the sleep state. You are all familiar with this sleep state in theory. The principle, which we call capital I and astral body, if names are to be used, separates from the physical body and the ether body. Yet, if we want to take a closer look at the nature of sleep, we have to be aware that it is actually in the sleep state that human beings experience the reality of which we spoke yesterday. I said that Augustine sought to grasp true and real certainty about the world in inner experience. But human beings do not fully grasp their inner life when they are in the waking state. It has to be understood that the principle known as I and as astral body does not really come to conscious awareness in the waking state. Only an image, a mirror image of I and astral body, comes to conscious awareness in this waking state. If human beings were aware of themselves when in the sleep state, that is, from going to sleep to waking up, or we might also say if they grew aware of themselves by doing the exercises which are described in my published works, they would, in being aware of their experiences during sleep, gain living experience of the true form, as it were, of I and astral body, and not of the mirror image they have in the waking state. It has to be understood that this true form of I and astral body appears before the soul, before conscious awareness, in images, in such a way that in their sleep human beings truly experience inwardly in their inner life, within their I and their astral body, something which we call the third hierarchy, the hierarchy of angels, archangels, and archai. In their waking state, human beings are not aware of this intimate connection with the spirits called angels, archangels, and archai, and connection, a connection, which continues for the whole of their lives. This is the delusion under which they are in their waking state, that their experience is limited to the abstract I and the shadowy ideas and thoughts that fill the human soul, for they are indeed shadowy, or indeed the dreamlike sense of wanting to do things. The whole point is that in their waking life, human beings have to remain limited to this shadow nature of their I and their astral body, and that they cannot be conscious of the fact that the spirits of the third hierarchy are having an influence on their I. At the very moment when human beings are actually waking up in sleep, if I may put it like this, they would not have an outside natural world around them, but would have an inner sense of those spirits, angels, archangels, and the spirits of the age. It is because of this that we have something in the state of our soul which we would not otherwise have. If the hierarchy of the angels did not influence our astral body, we would not be able to see ourselves as individuals. It is because the hierarchy of the angels influences our spirit and soul that we feel ourselves to be independent individuals. Thanks to the influence of the hierarchy of the archangels, we feel ourselves to be part of the whole of humanity. We may also say that we feel ourselves to be human because the archangels shine into our existence in spirit and soul, inspiring it. And because the archai, the spirits of the age, send their pulses into our true nature, intuiting it, we feel ourselves to be creatures on earth. That is, not just part of present-day humanity, but part of the whole of earthly humanity, from the beginnings of earth evolution to its end. So this is why we feel ourselves to be part of the whole of earth evolution. We sense it only dimly, for we only have a dim inner sense of the spirits of the age. We cannot say that we see ourselves as an individual. This we can only do when we achieve awareness in images. This awareness in images continues to be a kind of mirror image for as long as we only experience our thoughts in such a way that we feel ourselves to be individuals through our independent life of thought. Let us be clear once more as to what makes us feel that we are individuals. We do so in that we are able to join one thought arbitrarily to another. You would immediately cease to see yourself as an individual if you were forced to add one thought to another, the way one natural phenomenon follows another. The experience of inner freedom, in taking our thoughts forward, we feel ourselves to be individuals, is something which does come most clearly to conscious awareness when we are awake. It does so because from going to sleep to waking up, human beings are fully imbued with their angel, and this angelic spirit belongs to our I. It is with much greater indifference, much less strength and intensity, that we feel ourselves to be part of the whole of humanity, for we are naturally less close to the archangelic spirit, which makes us feel that we are human, than we are to our angel. And the principle which places us as individuals in the whole stream of human evolution does remain really, really shadowy. We try, of course, in working with spiritual science, to bring this feeling ourselves as part of the whole of earthly humanity awake. Realizing that in the fifth post-Atlantean era, human beings experience things in this way. In the fourth post-Atlantean era, they did so in another way. In the third post-Atlantean era, in yet another way. Through the science of the spirit, we now gain awareness of the way in which the state of the soul changes through the ages, under the influence of the different spirits of the age, the spirits from the hierarchy of the archai. And this awareness really makes it possible for human beings to see themselves in history, realizing, quote, I am an individual living in the 20th century. Close quote. Most people do not realize at all that their individual nature is only thinkable, can only be real, because it exists within a particular period of time. Our mind and spirit is wholly imbued with the spirits of the third hierarchy. This is something people would come to realize if they sought to develop insight in images in a more intensive way. As you will realize, this insight in images is not there in the ordinary run of human development. From going to sleep to waking up, the reality of I and astral body is dampened down. When awake, human beings lose the connection with the spirits of the third hierarchy. This is because, particularly in the present cycle of time, they are under an illusion, even when awake. As we have just seen, they are under the illusion in their sleep that their I and astral body are inactive. They are not inactive. They are in lively interaction with the spirits of the third hierarchy. In the waking state, the situation is that in the present cycle of time, our physical body and our ether body are, in a way, wrongfully absorbing our soul and spirit nature. They imbue themselves with it. The normal situation would be very different for human beings. It would be that in the waking state, human beings would feel themselves to be I and astral body, with the physical body and the ether body like a kind of peel or shell which they slip into, like something they carry about with them. But that is not how human beings feel themselves to be. They feel as if physical body and ether body were they, but they are not. We are indeed this entity in soul and spirit, which uses the physical and ether body like a tool. We are, however, unable to rise above this delusion. It is part of the influences which our cycle in time has. So, we have to feel identical with our physical body and ether body, though in the normal state of conscious awareness, this would be like a hammer we hold and use to strike. We have to give ourselves up to the delusion that it is we who move through space in the flesh. But it is not us. It is merely so because the conscious awareness is unlawfully absorbed by our physical body and our ether body. The reason for this is that the Ahramanic powers are more powerful in the present cycle of time than they would have been if human evolution had taken its normal course. They draw the eye and the astral body to the physical and ether body, as it were, creating the delusion for human beings that this head they have is they, that these hands and the whole body is they themselves. The physical body does unlawfully gain the conscious awareness which makes it seem as if our physical body brought about our individual nature. Someone who thinks that his physical body brings about his individual nature is under the same delusion as someone who stands in front of a mirror and thinks that the mirror is producing him since it is reflecting his image to him. To say that a form made of flesh, which we carry about with us, is us, is no better than if someone holds out his hand in front of a mirror and thinks that the mirror is producing his hand for him. The whole of modern science makes people believe that the individual nature we experience inwardly has something to do with the physical body and the ether body, and not that the physical body and the ether body reflect this I and astral nature, creating the illusory image which from waking up to going to sleep we say is our I and our thoughts, that is our astral body. This, as it were, is the fundamental truth which we must perceive in the first place. With regard to this fundamental truth, people today are, out of the forces in our present cycle of time, giving themselves up to a delusion in the conscious mind, which is exactly what I have just been saying. We think that the thoughts, or also feelings, we experience inwardly come from our living body. But human beings are subject to this delusion by nature. In their present state of conscious awareness, they cannot escape this delusion. Just as the sun seems larger when it appears on the horizon than it does when it is up above, we know this to be an illusion, but that is how it appears, so it has to seem to us that it is in flesh and blood, as it were, that we see ourselves as individuals. The conscious mind is deceived. Human beings have not always been subject to this delusion. Essentially, it is a character trait of post-Christian times, after the mystery on Golgotha. Before the mystery on Golgotha, it was a different kind of illusion. People did then not think that their conscious awareness was bound up with the physical body. History does not refer to this, but it is so nevertheless. It would be nonsense to suggest that someone who lived in the second or third millennium before the Christian era thought his soul was somehow produced by the physical body. In earlier times, no one felt that his soul and spiritual nature was bound to the living body the way people do today. The people of those earlier times did, however, have a lively awareness of the spirits of the third hierarchy. This they did have. They knew, quote, "My soul is not identical with my body," close quote. This gave them a distinct awareness that the soul is not bound to the blood or to the muscles and so on, but that the soul is connected with the spirits of the third hierarchy. A different kind of illusion existed for them, not in the conscious mind, but with regard to life. They considered this soul with the spirits of the third hierarchy to be bound to the natural world outside, just as modern man believes his soul to be bound to his physical body. Modern man is under the delusion, in his conscious mind, that his soul is bound to his physical body, and therefore does not see angels, archangels, and archai. His physical body obscures them for him. The human being of old, in spite of being distinctly aware of the presence of the spirits of the third hierarchy, of their being bound up with his soul, would see the sense-perceptible natural world only dimly, indirectly. Modern man thinks his soul depends on his body. The earlier human beings thought that the spirits of the third hierarchy were bound up with the natural world outside, a world they perceived only dimly. They would confuse divine spirits, the spirits of the third hierarchy, with natural phenomena, seeing them reflected in those natural phenomena. Modern man places his soul in flesh and blood. The people of those early times placed the spirits of the third hierarchy in the natural world outside. They did not have the natural science we have today, but believed natural phenomena to be brought about by one demon or another, by more or less divine spirits about which they were under a life delusion. They were under that delusion because, in their view, those spirits were active in the natural phenomena in an almost physical form. It is important to know that in human evolution there was this earlier, pre-Christian time, when human beings were under the life illusion which I have characterized. After the mystery on Golgotha, people were under an illusion in the conscious mind. The influence of Christ Jesus, we'll speak of this tomorrow, should be to remove this mental delusion, at least in people's conscious minds, in a way similar to the way it was done for the life delusion in the ancient mysteries. With the, quote, Christ in me, close quote, people should feel that the principle, which is I and astral body, lives in spiritual freedom and is not bound up with flesh and blood. They will, of course, only be able to perceive it through vision gained in spiritual science. But thanks to Paul's not I, but the Christ in me, they can feel it. The things I have been saying will give you the reasons why human beings must, in a way, experience the duality of the natural order on the one hand. This has no ideals, linking one event with the next from sheer necessity, merely connecting cause with effect, and effect with cause, so that it is never possible to think that moral or other kinds of ideals are connected with whatever happens in the natural world. On the other hand, one comes to realize that our existence would not be truly human without ideals, if we did not have something else to live with as human beings, something other than mere natural order. However, with the existing conscious awareness, we would not be able to see that our ideals can be as effective as electricity or magnetism or the power of heat, so that our ideals would actually influence the natural order. Because of this, the natural order and the ideal order are side by side for us, and we cannot bridge the gap between them. In our waking hours, the Ahrimanic free thinking is, quote, as an individual person, I am not any more bound to my physical body and to my ether body than I am bound when I stand before a mirror, and the mirror reflects my image for me, close quote. If people's awareness of their I and astral body were like this, and if they would realize that this I and this astral body are something very real and not a mere mirror image, then they would also acknowledge on the basis of their ideals, quote, those are real powers, like electricity and magnetism, but they do not have an influence in the present time, but will gain effectiveness as we go from this present incarnation to the next, from this life on earth to the next, close quote. If human beings were to realize, when in their waking state, that their I and their astral body are bound up with the spirits of the third hierarchy, or in other words, if they were able to know themselves fully as earthly human beings, not just feeling themselves, to be an independent individual. If they could sense how they are wrong in feeling that they are human beings of flesh and blood, then they also would not think that the natural order which presents itself to their senses out there was indeed powerful enough to resist the power of their ideals. They would know that all matter disintegrates in the natural order of today, that there is no such thing as the conservation of matter, but that everything which is natural destroys itself. When today's nature does no longer exist, something else, outward, sense-perceptible, and real, will have taken its place. The ideals of today will be the natural world of times to come. We are therefore able to say, quote, we experience natural order today, there's a figure drawn, and ideal order, another figure, close quote. Physicists think that there is conservation of energy and of matter, that the natural order persists, with the same atoms and the same forces taking effect in future. If they are honest, all they can say is, quote, the ideal order has been a dream. It must drop away and vanish, like the dream itself, so that in the earth's end state the ideal dream will no longer be there, will have been buried, close quote. Through natural science we see that this is an untruth, an illusion. We do have the natural order, but there is no conservation of energy and of matter. The natural order comes to an end at a certain point, and today's ideal order will then be the continuation of it. None of the things that are around our eyes today, around our ears, around all our senses, will exist when the earth has reached the Venus stage. I have spoken of this before. Within that nothingness, the possibility will arise for the ideals of present-day humanity to be outer reality. No philosophy of life which fails to recognize that the sense-perceptible world will perish can have any hope whatsoever that the ideal principle has the power to come to realization. If the sense-perceptible world were eternal, if there were such a thing as conservation of energy and of matter, the ideal world would be nothing but a dream. It is of tremendous importance that humanity needs to be enlightened in our day, and know that the ideas of the present time will be the natural world of the future, and that it is a tremendous illusion to think that atoms and physical forces go on forever. They are not eternal. They are temporal. It is a fatal aspect of spiritual science that one has to contradict a view which is considered to be the most certain of all in the established science of today, when in fact it is nothing but an Ahrimanic deception. Let us consider once more what I have just been saying. Before the mystery on Golgotha, human illusion was an illusion in life. After the mystery on Golgotha, it became what we may call an illusion in the conscious mind. If we know this, we understand many things in human evolution. Above all, we understand why human beings who, before the mystery on Golgotha, had atavistic clairvoyance, nevertheless did not see the things which they did see in their true form, but saw the spirits of the higher hierarchies as demons. This is why the old mythologies are largely demonologies. All the gods in the ancient mythologies are demons. This was so because there was this illusion in life, and human beings did, in a way, have to think of a kind of false natural order as the divine order, just as today they have to think of a false bodily order as humanity's order. There followed the mystery on Golgotha. Human beings had to take their state of soul to the point, as it were, where they perceived what had resulted from the mystery on Golgotha. The human soul related more directly in its waking state to the spirits of the higher hierarchies than it does today, when the conscious mind is deceived. People would see the spirits of the higher hierarchies, merely recasting them because of the life delusion, into Zeus, Apollo, and so on. Those were spirits of the third hierarchy, but they had been recast, seen under the influence of the life delusion, just as today we see everything relating to man under the influence of the conscious mind's delusion. Yet with all this, a divine world order extended into humanity. Just consider how close people of past ages knew their human world to be to the divine world order. There you'd have the human hierarchy, and then there would be the divine hierarchy. People did not feel as closed off above as we do today. Their world ran on toward that of the gods. Think how close a Greek would feel his world of gods to be to the human world, the human hierarchy. There followed the mystery on Golgotha. There it was no longer the case. It was not the mystery on Golgotha, which was to provide a replacement for what had been lost, but it was time which brought it about that human beings were cut off, in their evolution, from that conscious connection with the divine and spiritual world of the third hierarchy. A memory remained, however, an historical memory. Then came the time after the mystery on Golgotha. People had to think in a somewhat different way than they had done before the mystery on Golgotha, but some of the immediate past still had an influence. In the immediate past, human beings knew that the divine spirits had influenced events on earth, putting human activities on earth in order. Because of this, people of old were convinced when they established states. The term state does not quite meet the case, but people are used to putting it this way. When the people of old created social structures, founded them, I'd say, they would know that these social structures were being established under the influence of the third hierarchy. People felt that their institutions on earth were institutions of the gods. You need only study the history of ancient Egypt, with no need for clairvoyance, and you'll find that the Egyptians were wholly convinced that everything human beings did in their social situations on earth was instituted by the spirits of the third hierarchy. This is how it was before the mystery on Golgotha. Only a memory of this remained after the mystery on Golgotha. What was the consequence of this? Well, you know that the church gradually established itself after the mystery on Golgotha. The church established a particular ranking order, deacons, archdeacons, bishops, archbishops, and so on. There was a quite specific idea behind this, which is still quite evident in the works of the early church writers. Read Dionysius the Areopagite, and you'll see it quite clearly. The administration of the church was to reflect the divine order. The way a deacon related to the archdeacon was to reflect the relationship of angel to archangel, and then again the relationship of archdeacon to bishop, a reflection of archangel to archai. The social structure of the church was intended to reflect the theocracy. Up in the spiritual world were the ranks of the hierarchies. Below, reflecting the spiritual hierarchies, the ranks of church dignitaries. The thinking behind this was not of the legal kind in the early days, after the mystery on Golgotha. It was theocratic. The church's hierarchy was seen as a reflection of the divine and spiritual hierarchies. This was the thinking in the early Christian centuries on earth, intending to cultivate institutions on earth where the relative positions of human beings reflected the image of the hierarchies up above in the spiritual world. People then gradually lost the awareness that had remained as a memory, an historical memory, from the times of the old theocracy, when they had still known that earthly institutions were in fact a consequence of things done by the gods. Abstract concepts took the place of the living world of gods, which people had seen in the past and later on remembered. Instead of knowing that there is a world of divine, individual spirits up there, people then had abstract metaphysical concepts. There followed centuries when abstract ideas, metaphysics, took the place of the individual gods. Christians would call them angels. The divine order, which was to be reflected in the human order, had provided a theocratic element. The application of mere concepts to the order of human society provided something which, well, could only serve to maintain order in human social relationships. Where, before, thought was given to creating an image of the divine world, in the way human society was structured, the only aim in the metaphysical age was to maintain order, punish evildoers, neither punish nor reward the good, establishing the kind of order needed to maintain the social order. When abstract metaphysical concepts had replaced the living gods, it was merely a matter of creating a human order in which people were labeled, making one the superior of the other, not because being superior was meant to reflect the relationship of an archangel to an angel, but because order was only considered possible if one person commanded and the other obeyed. Abstraction took the place of a social order that had been full of life. Essentially, this was the time of real metaphysics throughout the Middle Ages. It was the Roman mentality which essentially provided the elements for this metaphysical order, which then spread everywhere. The German word Fürst remains to remind us of the theocratic order, the first, because someone has to be the first, just as one is the first also in the divine hierarchy. A reminder of the merely metaphysical kind of order, the order of officialdom, administrators, is the German word Graf, which is connected with Grafo, to write. The metaphysical order involves registration, maintaining order, producing documents, making contracts. Then came the more recent times. They brought disbelief in those abstract concepts, disbelief in metaphysics. People were only able to believe in anything evident to the senses, even in human life. Awareness of the traditions which had still persisted in earlier times, when traditions were living awareness of the fact that something or other was at work in social structures, originally people thought of gods, later of metaphysical concepts. Such living awareness no longer existed in more recent times. It has to be regained in the ways indicated through spiritual science. But the Industrial Age brought the total eradication of all awareness of the spiritual background to the social structure. This is why Auguste Comte and Saint-Simon felt particularly connected with the Industrial Age, seeing that they were prepared only to accept positivist science, that is, anything connected with external, sense-perceptible natural order of causal necessity. The concept of truth has changed completely as a result. Modern people are not yet truly sentient of the fact that the concept of truth has a history. People have no real idea of this today. People who still know themselves to be in a theocratic order did not see truth the way people do today, on the authority of natural science. It is extraordinarily difficult to speak about these things. Today, one thinks that with regard to the world order, truth means that an idea is in accord with an external reality. This is because of natural science. They did not see truth like this in the early Christian centuries. Their idea of truth was different, and this other meaning of truth was largely connected with the theocratic social order. They truly did not have the idea of truth which lives in all human souls today. People fail to realize this extraordinarily important fact. It will be much easier for us to grasp the idea of truth which people then had if we connect it with the idea of the ordeal. Footnote, historically an ancient test of guilt or innocence by subjecting the accused to severe pain, survival of which was taken as divine proof of innocence. The German term for this translates as divine judgment. Footnote, end of footnote by translator. When two people enter into single combat, we need not concern ourselves with the view taken of a duel today. I'm merely giving it as an example. It cannot be decided beforehand if A will win or B. Otherwise, they'd hardly start their duel. No, the truth only emerges as the event proceeds. We still have this idea of truth today, when a war is fought. People would not go to war if everything was known beforehand, as it is when an experiment is done in a laboratory, where every aspect has been considered beforehand, and one knows what the result will be. People would hardly go to war if they knew the outcome in advance, as one does with a laboratory experiment. There we still have the old idea of truth, which was that the truth will only be apparent in the process, and all one can do is watch and see what the result of the ordeal will be. That was the old idea of truth. People like Auguste Comte, or today's socialists, who have completely abandoned this idea of truth, other people have not, they only think they have, only acknowledge the kind of truth where developments can be foreseen. Quote, gaining insight in order to foresee, close quote, was Auguste Comte's motto. And that is a radical reversal of the idea of truth in our time. But we can only grasp nature with this idea of truth. And people are under a colossal illusion in this respect. They think, for instance, that they are able to grasp historical life with Auguste Comte's notion of truth. But one cannot do this. Nor can one do so with the old ordeal notion of truth. But that was influenced by the life illusion. Our present-day idea of truth is under the influence of the mind being deceived. There will have to be the idea of truth developed out of anthroposophy, a concept of truth that is gained in a much more comprehensive way than the way in which Augustine, for example, arrived at his idea of truth. As I have shown, this was subject to a delusion. This is connected with many things and very much depends on it. It is not enough to speak of an evolution of the idea of truth in abstract terms. We have to know in detail how the idea of truth takes the human soul in different directions, depending on the nature of this idea of truth. It is an anachronism to speak of nationality the way it could be done in pre-Christian times. Then it was not just that people were thinking that the divine order extended into the human order. It truly was so. Now it no longer extends into it. So, where people today cling to natural orders, to things merely brought about by birth following birth, the national principle, for instance, we are in an anachronism. People are forced today to look for different structures for their social order in post-Christian times, structures that are not determined from outside. People of earlier times were able to consider their nationality because they saw this as an institution of the divine order and saw life on earth as a reflection of the divine order. Modern man cannot venerate the nation itself as something special in the same way without falling into anachronism. We must endeavor to find different social structures. To venerate the nation as something special would lead to the Ahrimanic deception of today. Nations are leftovers from pre-Christian times. And modern humanity must get beyond that by developing in the way which I have mentioned. We have to realize how much people are seeking a special form of the truth concept. This is important, even if it is awkward at the present time. If we are unbiased in taking the standpoint of truly grasping reality, we will have to accept many an uncomfortable truth. People are today literally moving toward the true aim of anthroposophy. The philosophy of life, which had Auguste Comte as its particular representative, is limited to the natural order outside. There is need to advance again into the spiritual world, and a bridge must be built between reality and ideality. This is indeed what I want to refer to particularly in these lectures. It will not happen, however, if we merely talk of these things, but only if we grasp the concrete impulses in the world. For this, we must look wholly without bias at certain facts. strange facts are connected with the things we are now considering. Just think. Yesterday I spoke to you about Saint Simon and Auguste Comte. Both were only considering positivist science to matter, that is, anything relating to sense-perceptible life, to the causal natural order. And yet there is the strange fact that Auguste Comte turned away from Saint Simon, his teacher and guide, because Saint Simon had become too much of a mystic in old age. The strange fact is that Saint Simon, as well as Auguste Comte, were, on the one hand, basing themselves firmly on the ground of Ahrimanic science, consciously basing themselves on Ahrimanic science in the industrial age, and then to turn mystic. Strange. It is a strange fact. We have to inquire into the why of such a fact. The why of such a fact will, however, only show itself if we take an unbiased view of the way in which human beings are seeking spirituality. Many people who, like Auguste Comte and Saint Simon, intended to go only by the natural order, are moving towards spirituality. Now, there is something most peculiar in the human life of more recent times. Take another fact. Looking at it wholly without bias, without any kind of national chauvinism, which does not become us. In the views that arise as the flower of more recent national characteristics, something is characteristic in a way which is to be found down below in these national characters. Starting from this, I'd refer you to another fact, to Bentham, very much a trend-setting English philosopher who lived from 1748 to 1832. Bentham may be said to have been characteristic of his people's way of thinking. In a sense, Bentham's way of thinking has been called utilitarian, also utilitarian in a deeper sense. There is a particular principle behind his thinking that relates to the ideal world order. This principle is usually also referred to as, quote, the greatest happiness principle, close quote. This human happiness is, according to Bentham, that the good, that is, the ideal to aim for, consisted in the greatest happiness of the greatest number of people on earth. Let us really look at this. The good is the greatest happiness for the greatest number of people on earth. This is indeed a key element in utilitarian philosophy. We have to consider that those words have been called absolutely Ahrimanic, not by Bentham and his followers, but by people who take the spiritual point of view. Occultists in his own country have said that Bentham produced this, in quotes, utterly devilish statement. They called it devilish, for according to those occultists, if it were the case that the good consists in the greatest happiness for the greatest number of people, then evil would consist in the greatest happiness for the smallest number of people. This is not something which I myself want to present as a definition or explication. It is what people say. So on the one hand, the English philosophy of Bentham, greatest happiness. On the other hand, English spiritualists saying, Bentham's thesis is absolutely devilish, for in that case evil would mean the greatest happiness for the smallest number of people. The conclusion would be that evil and happiness could exist together, and a spiritualist cannot accept that under any circumstances. I am merely presenting a fact in cultural life which is most eminently significant for the most tremendous opposition existing between spiritualists and the outward philosophy of life in a particular area on earth. Having said that, in tomorrow's talk, these oppositions will be resolved, I am ending today's talk with a succinct statement. You can take three things, Goetheanism, Comteanism, and Benthamism. These relate in three different ways to humanity's spiritual striving for the future. German Goetheanism, as such, has the potential to develop into spiritualism. French Comteanism is such that spiritualism can develop alongside it, like the strange mysticism alongside the positivist philosophy of Auguste Comte and Saint Simon. With the English utilitarianism, Benthamism, the only thing that can arise is the most severe opposition of spiritualists to the popular view. This is a fundamental part of evolution itself. French nature has to evolve in such a way that idealism and realism, mysticism and positivism, can run side by side. In England, within essential British nature, things will more and more go in a direction where the people who become spiritualists there will gradually have to fight more and more against their own national characteristics, that is, against the flowers of the philosophies of their nation. As to Auguste Comte, I am not presenting theories, but also giving you the facts, or at least some of them. When he had turned to positivism, he abandoned his teacher, Saint Simon. But there was such a distinct inclination toward mysticism at the end of his life, he clearly accepted a trinity. He venerated three things, the great fetish, the great medium, and the great spirit. And as he said that the great fetish was the womb of humanity in space, space was the medium from which humanity arose as from the womb. The great spirit is humanity spread out over the earth in abstract terms. Auguste Comte acknowledged this trinity, a strange combination of positivism and mysticism. We'll say more of this tomorrow. The end of Lecture 2.